Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. Well, who would have thought it, eh? Who would have thought that the man responsible for recommending the lockdown didn't think that it applied to him? It takes a special kind of stupid for someone who is supposedly intelligent to behave like Professor Neil Ferguson has. He's managed to turn a viral pandemic into some kind of 1970s sex farce called Carry On Corona. Thanks to married mother of two, Antonia Statz, the lockdown professor has somehow managed to completely undermine government policy, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, Health Secretary Matt Hancock, and even his own recommended ideas about the lockdown. That's right, the man who said 500,000 people could die from COVID-19 decided it was a great idea to invite his mistress to drive across London, not once, but twice, for a bit of horizontal refreshment in what he is now calling an era of judgment. And as if the story needed any extra spice, it turns out that Ms. Statz is an open marriage, campaigns for climate change, is a massive anti-Brexit demonstrator as well. For heaven's sake, you really couldn't make this stuff up. Is the bloke who writes The Thick of It, or In the Thick of It even, involved in this, or a Citizen Smith or something like that? 03444991000. Meanwhile, back in the real world, it's Prime Minister's Question Time today, this time with the Prime Minister in situ for the first time up against Keir Starmer. We shall see how Boris decides to deal with the Labour leader in the newly pared-back surroundings of an empty chamber, and we will bring you that live, of course, from midday. We want to hear from you, though, because you are the eyes and ears of the Independent Republic. Tell us what is going on in your world today, what you're hearing, what you're being told by your employers, because there's a lot of hinting going on in the press this morning that Rishi Sunak is going to end the furlough system by July. He wants to encourage people to go back to work. We're going to hear more about that as the days go on this week. Possibly Thursday we'll hear something, and certainly by Sunday we expect Prime Minister Boris Johnson to bring us news of how the lockdown will be lifted. Coming up, we'll also be joined by travel guru Simon Calder, who brings us the lowdown on the lockdown relaxation for travel and which airlines are likely to be back in business any time soon. And on homeschooling today, we're going to be learning how to make pasta at home from scratch. That's going to be fascinating. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
There's been a lot of hand-wringing from the lefties today saying, why are all these people picking on Professor Neil Ferguson? It doesn't matter that he was having an extramarital affair with a married woman who lives in a big £1.9 million house in South London and is in an open marriage and is from Germany and is a climate change activist that is very possibly in the pay of George Soros. None of that matters, of course, only the fact that he broke the lockdown. Oh, really? Well, let's ask Stuart Jackson, former MP, former special advisor, of course, to David Davis. Stuart, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
I mean, I didn't think this story could get any more ridiculous, but with every sort of detail that I read last night, I was finding myself quite incapable of believing my eyes.
Well, I think you're being a bit harsh because he didn't leave his house and obviously he took home workout to new lengths, really, didn't he? with Ms. Stat.
Yes.
But seriously, I think this is an issue that is worthy of being on the front page of the Telegraph, because it does show hypocrisy, and that's what the public hate most about politicians and
yes.
government. They hate hypocrisy.
Yes.
But actually, it also refocuses again on Neil Ferguson's model, not the one that he was meeting in secret, but the model he's used, and his past history of prognostications and projections, which haven't always been accurate.
Well, to be honest, I mean, looking back at his track record, Stuart, I'm struggling to find any place where he's been accurate at all.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, you have to get these things as right as you can when you are euthanizing the economy, where you're putting the lives of people in cold storage for literally weeks and months on end. And actually, it was a very interesting article also in the Telegraph yesterday about the long-term impact of the lockdown on, for instance, children's education and GDP, you know, economic activity. And I do think that we really seriously need to question the projections that were made at Imperial College and really think very seriously, as I think the Prime Minister will on Sunday, about a phased incremental end to the lockdown, because people are, despite what they tell the polls, I think people are getting very restless now as they see their mortgages, their jobs, their pensions, their savings irredeemably affected negatively.
Yes, no, I think you're absolutely right.
I think you will do that.
And I think the point about this story, as you quite rightly say, Stuart, is, you know, there are those who would seek to sort of dismiss the gutter press. I mean, first of all, the Daily Telegraph is hardly the gutter press, and say, why are you going after this guy just because of his sex life? Nobody's interested in that. The point is that people's attitudes during this kind of situation are very different. And if you, like me, have not seen your children for 6 to 7 weeks because you've been adhering to what you were recommended to do by none other than Professor Neil Ferguson, and you see him, you know, willy-nilly, as it were, doing whatever he likes and not bothering to pay attention to his own regulations, you start to think, well, you know, who's the mug here? Is it me? And people who have been tweeting me all through the night saying, you know, my special needs daughter has not been able to see her grandparents or any of her friends because of this lockdown. Who the hell does this guy think he is? It has a massive effect on the general kind of malaise of the nation. And people who right now have been not seeing their boyfriend or girlfriend or mistress or whatever are going to be doing it today.
Well, exactly. And the other thing is, you've got older people who are suffering because, in terms of mental health. Loneliness amongst over 75s was a problem before in this country. It's a lot worse now. I mean, my father's 87 and he's been self-isolating for 6 weeks.
So you haven't seen him, right?
Well, I have seen him because, you know, I video on WhatsApp. So I talked to him.
Yeah, it's not the same. I mean, I've done that with my kids, but it's not the same. I miss them terribly, and they miss me, you know?
No. I think what sticks in my craw, if I may say so, is that, you know, we're being lectured on good governance by Alistair Campbell. I mean, do we take this guy seriously?
Well, I certainly don't.
He was responsible for one of the most catastrophic and damaging foreign policy disasters that we've seen in this country, the lead up to the Iraq war and the lies and misinformation. For him to be lecturing the government on what's good policy is deeply troubling and a great example of chutzpah. But
he once made the mistake of sitting in my tent of common sense in Westminster and accusing Boris Johnson of lying. I'm afraid I had to say, well, you're not bad at that yourself, Alistair, are you? What about the dodgy dossier? And he had to confess.
Well, he's a professor of mendacity, Campbell. He invented the whole concept of devious spin and manipulation and lies in government, I'm afraid. And, you know, the government would be well advised not to take any of his views seriously. Mm. To be fair, and you don't get me saying this very often, but both John Ashworth, the Shadow Health Secretary, and Keir Starmer have behaved with laudable restraint in the national interest. Unfortunately, Campbell is not doing it. It's all about attacking the Tories and undermining Boris Johnson.
Yes, absolutely right. And that is what I find quite remarkable. I mean, even old Carol Codswallop's been at it this morning, saying that, you know, this should not be in any way, you know, a criticism made of Neil Ferguson just because he wants to do something in the privacy of his own home. You know, suddenly they're all hell fellow well met when it comes to adultery involving lefties. But when it involves Boris Johnson and having affairs and having children with other women, you know, suddenly that's the worst crime of all time.
Well, it's double standards, isn't it? It's do as I say, not as I do. And, you know, moral frameworks are for the little people, but for the erudite and you know, witty and well-connected lefties, that, you know, that there's a different moral universe. You know, if I was Carol Codswallop, I'd probably be spending a bit more time with my lawyers.
I think that's probably true. Let's talk a bit about the front page of the Times today as well, because they're talking about Rishi Sunak and having to move into a programme of removing, basically, the furlough situation, because obviously the furlough has worked very well. But there are now some people saying that it was unfortunately something which is going to create more dependence by people who may not be able to go back to work.
Well, I don't think it should be manipulated by companies who've got big cash reserves and are paying dividends. I think, you know, bigger companies, I'm not talking about the Victoria Beckham example, because that's a bit of an egregious example, but most companies where they can afford to properly pay their workers as we go back into the full market and commercial activity should do so. I think he's right to be looking at July, because I think it will be catastrophic for the economy if in July we're still in lockdown. So I think that's good to aim for. My view is, look, the chances, if you haven't got a pre-existing medical condition and you're under 60, of getting COVID-19 and dying are very, very small. It's less than 0.4%. of people in that category. So we need to take those people who've got COPD, diabetes, stroke conditions, and shield them, mainly over 70. The rest, people who are under 50, certainly probably under 60, who can meaningfully go to work, obviously using PPE, using masks, and also safe spaces and social distancing, should do so, I think, by the end of May. Because you cannot have a situation where you've got an extra 6 million people being supported by the state,
right,
because the cost of that and the impact long-term on the economy will be catastrophic, and it's just not sustainable.
Well, that's the thing, and I suppose, it like many things, which is all very well to talk with hindsight, you know, they needed to be done at the time. I don't think there were any wrong decisions made at the time. There's going to be lots of people going all the way back to January and asking what questions should have been asked and all of that. But, you know, the bottom line for me is that, you know, it was a good system in order to stop people from having to work. However, they now have to find a way out of it, and that's not going to be that easy, though, is it?
No, it isn't. And it's as well also, Mike, if you don't mind, for me just to mention this figure that the lefties and people who are hostile to the government are using, you know, we've got a higher death rate than Italy.
Yeah.
Italy's substantially smaller population. We've got a capital city, which is at least twice the size of Italy's biggest city. We've got incidences of deprivation and obesity that you probably don't have in most of Europe. We've got a situation where we're a global hub for travel. We've got overcrowded and dense urban areas. You know, there are other factors. And actually, per capita, per 100,000, I think we're still either third or fourth in Europe. But obviously, it's a stick to beat the government to say, you know, we weren't prepared, the government hasn't pursued the right policy, and now we've got the highest fatality rate. You know, if you look below the figures, it's not as simple as that. But in terms of the economy, yeah, I think the government needs to take a sectoral approach. It needs to focus on those hardest hit, which is basically leisure, tourism, hospitality, aviation, and not put money into areas which haven't been hit, like fintech, finance, banking, insurance.
No, exactly right. Also, I saw a Reuters story coming out of Italy about 2 days ago in which they said that Italy's death figure is way, way underestimating the actual truth of the matter and is likely to come out very much sooner rather than later with a much bigger figure because they just haven't been counting it right. So, I mean, there's all manner of different ways of comparing figures.
Yes, and Italy had a special circumstance, as you know, and I think we might have discussed it before on the show, in that lots and lots of Chinese workers are involved in the fashion industry in northern Italy.
That's right.
And they travelled from central China right through December and January to jobs in Turin and Milan. And that was a special factor that caused the exponential rise in COVID-19. So the point being, every country has its own unique circumstances. And as some of them, people like Carol Sikora, who is deeply respected as a cancer specialist, who's been commenting a lot, has simply said it's impossible to compare every country because they count in different ways and they have different circumstances.
Yes, absolutely right. And I mean, as far as the way that the pandemic now moves, I mean, it certainly seems as though all the indicators are going in the right direction. It certainly seems as though, and neither one of us are medical men, so there's no point pretending that we are, but we are told that the death rates are going down. We are told that the infection rates are going down. We're told that the very important R number has gone down to something like 0.6 to 0.9, which means infections will happen less and less. So it's all kind of going in the right direction.
It is, and I think what we need to do is look at the best practice from other countries, see how the lockdown release in Italy, Portugal, Spain and Germany goes, and pick off the best exercises that they're taking place there in releasing people back into the economy. Obviously, track and trace and testing is very, very important, and we'll all be looking at the pilot scheme on the Isle of Wight to see how that goes, whether that works or not. I think people forget when they criticise the government that just a month ago there was a very real risk that intensive care in this country would be completely overrun by COVID, and that cancer and other elective surgeries would be thrown out the window because of the focus on COVID-19, and that never happened. And I think the government should be given some credit for that. They didn't save the NHS staff did, but they did do the right thing. And for people to be complaining, for instance, about Nightingale Hospital, well, it's empty, there's no people there. I think that's probably a badge of success.
Well, it is. Failure. I mean, some people are saying, why not use it now for some of the other beds that that should be occupied by cancer patients? But again, I think as we've discovered through all of this, Stuart, you know, it's not quite as simple as that. You know, it's all very well for journalists like me and others to kind of be critical of what the government is doing and how the civil service is operating and all of that. But, I mean, what we are seeing here is unprecedented. And I know that people get sick of hearing that word, but you know, it has been an incredibly massive problem that we have had to deal with, and I think we've dealt with it rather well.
I do, and I just think people like Alistair Campbell, you know, they would have been on the airwaves in May 1940 in the Norway campaign saying, you know, those paratroopers we're having to evacuate from Norway, you know, they've been let down by Chamberlain, yes, and Churchill. You know, where we need an inquiry. You know, this is a national crisis. This is an international.
Well, it's an international crisis, isn't it?
Yeah, we've never seen anything like this before. Are politicians perfect? No, but actually, if they were that bad, they would not be registering record levels of support as Boris Johnson and his government is and has been.
Absolutely.
Much more incidentally than their most vociferous critics like Robert Peston in the media and people like Channel 4 News and Newsnight, who people, frankly, don't trust anymore.
Well, they really don't, and with good reason, to be honest. Stuart, great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Stuart Jackson there, former MP for the Tory Party, former special advisor to David Davis, of course, in the Brexit office. Lots more to come. We've got live YouTube and live streaming going on right now, so you can watch us as well as listening to us. There's massive amounts to talk about. We're going to talk about travel. We're going to talk about furloughs. We're going to talk as well about the top government advisor, Professor Neil Ferguson, who has resigned as a result of not following his own advice. And what an absolute plank. And unfortunately for him, his story came out just after we recorded Plank of the Week, which is out there now both in podcast form and on YouTube. So you must watch that and listen to it later on.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Lots more for us to do today. We're going to be speaking to Anne Frank, CEO of Chartered Management Institute, the CMI, in the next hour, because she's going to be telling us how managers are not terribly optimistic about the economy in the next 6 months. We'll also talk to her about the furloughing story, which is all over the papers this morning. Taxpayer support for millions of furloughed workers could be cut amid fears of the scheme's rising costs. So come July, it might be all over. We've already got the first stage of the furloughing sort of running out even as we speak. But let's talk about the travel business now, though, because Simon Calder, our favourite travel guru, is here with us to find out from him precisely what is going on out there, because it's a bit of a mixed package, I'd have to say. Simon, a very good morning to you.
I thought you were going to tell me, Mike, what's going on out there. Frankly, it's an almighty muddle.
Well, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah, so just to bring people up to date, the British Airline Pilots Association believes that 23,000 airline staff in the UK have so far been told that they have lost their jobs. We've heard Virgin Atlantic saying yesterday it's going to close its Gatwick base. And I'm probably the only person old enough to remember they started there in 1984.
Goodness me,
you were still at school.
I wish that was true. I'm afraid I was one of those people who used to sleep overnight at Victoria Station to get the Freddie Laker standby tickets to New York.
No.
I was.
Crikey. Yes, fantastic times. I can't wait to catch up with you on that. And in fact, on that subject, actually, funny how things come around, Gatwick is going to see this huge vacuum, some of which will be filled, I suspect, by Ryanair, some of which by Wizz Air. But also, you might see that some airline comes in with a long-haul, low-cost, no-frills service, just like Freddie Laker promised back in 1977, only this time they get it absolutely right. So it's absolutely terrible for the tens of thousands of fantastic people working in travel who are currently furloughed or in danger of losing their jobs. But yeah, it will come back. We are, by nature, as humans, we are restless, we're inquisitive, we're adventurous, and we will go travelling again. But right now, it's just awful, not least because loads of people who book trips are thinking, hang on, I gave you all this money. You said you'd give me a holiday. You haven't been able to give me that holiday for understandable reasons. So why aren't you giving me my money back right now?
Yes, and we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks telling people and getting advice from consumer organisations to say that, look, if you are owed a refund, you can get that refund because they are legally obliged to give it to you. But we'll move on from that because I've got other questions for you, Simon, this morning. Wizz Air started to fly to Spain, I understand, last week. What happens when you get to Spain? Does anybody know the answer to that question? If you are go from here.
It's very, very straightforward, Mike. These flights are not for fun. They are for repatriation. They're for essential workers. They're for anybody who can turn up in Tenerife and say, look, I'm a Spanish person coming home, or I'm an essential worker, and look, I've got this letter of authorization from the Spanish Health Service or whoever to tell me that I need to travel. So nobody's travelling for fun. However, Wizz Air, once again, yesterday, just as Virgin Atlantic were announcing all those job losses, came out and said, we're launching six new routes from Luton, starting 16th of June from Luton to Faro in Portugal. And that, just before the news, you were saying, what's happening? When are we going to be able to go anywhere? That's the strongest news I've heard so far, because follow the money, Mike, know that. If they are saying we're going to launch this new route, then they presumably have been in some talks, which indicates to them that second half of June, Portugal looks okay.
Well, I mean, I'd have to say to you, I have a friend who lives in Portugal, and they're opening the golf courses this week, and they are going to be opening restaurants later on in May. So by June, it may well be that if you fancy getting the old golf clubs on the back, spending a couple of days at Villamore and Quinta del Lago, Bob's your uncle.
Of course, that is how Europe is going to look, maybe in July, maybe in August, probably in September. And nobody quite knows how it's going to unlock. But we are now talking. The Greek tourism minister has this morning been saying, look, we're hoping actually to get things really going in July. Interestingly, Wizz Air, four of their flights are to four of the Greek islands. And I think, of course, having seen, and I know that you've been discussing this, the image on social media of hundreds of passengers on a plane and no social distancing, we have to accept that social distancing and aviation are absolutely and fundamentally incompatible. It's not going to work. The airlines, the airports want to bring in all kinds of requirements for temperature checks and masks, but that's not, if you look at the international medical advice, that's not actually going to do much good. It's entirely about confidence and persuading people.
Yes, and you
sit next to Mike Graham, he's got a mask on, he'll be fine. I mean, ultimately, of course, the only way that we're going to get through this is if you and I scrupulously wash our hands, as we've been told to since day one. And furthermore, you've got any faint symptoms, you do not go anywhere near an aircraft or any other form of transport.
Well, I mean, or indeed, if the airlines find a way to regularly and reasonably accurately test people before they get on the plane, or ask you to have a test of some kind before you book your flight to show that either you've had the virus and you're therefore not transmissible anymore, more or something. You know, that may well be what they can do, because in places like Singapore, for example, they do that before you go into a restaurant. They've reopened restaurants, but they have a little temperature check before you go in. And if you don't submit to the temperature check, you're not allowed in. And if you are over a certain temperature, you're also not allowed in. So I wonder if they could get some form of situation like that, whereby you would just travel on the plane in a normal way, because everybody would assume that you're fine.
The trouble is, of course, temperature checks won't necessarily pick everybody up. There'll be false negatives as well as false positives. And if you look at what the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control and the World Health Organization say, they're not great fans of temperature checks or wearing face coverings, but I think that's the way we're going to be going.
Yeah. And I mean, frankly, what I find interesting, Simon, is, you know, in the olden days before COVID-19, we used to talk about before Brexit, you know, when life was a little bit simpler. You know, I mean, you could get on a plane in Kennedy Airport or in Wuhan province and sit next to somebody who had some ghastly disease, which you would then catch.
Yes, of course.
I know, I mean, it's a bit different now, but is
No. It's a really, really important point, Mike, and thank you for making it. Absolutely critical that we do not lose sight of the wider risks. Mm. And, for example, the tourism industry in Kenya is being destroyed, as you would appreciate, because nobody's going there. This is a nation that has to handle things such as malaria, the occasional cholera outbreak, all kinds of nasty stuff going on relentlessly all the time.
Yes.
And we're not going because there's a concern about, you know, what is, and I don't for one moment wish to diminish the tragic, tragic loss of life that we've seen. But on the scale of compared with malaria, I can be pretty confident with a no medical background whatsoever. I can be pretty confident that fewer people will die of COVID-19 this year, very sadly, than will die of malaria, very sadly.
Yeah, I think it's partly the fear, isn't it? It's partly the kind of organised lockdowns that have happened in practically every country in the world, which have made it very difficult. I'm hearing that Greece has been making noises about opening up, and I've also heard that, or been told, I know this for a fact, that in Austria they're going to be opening up the hotels towards the end of May. But who's going to be going there?
Well, that's a very good question. I've been doing regular Twitter polls, looking at July, actually, just saying, if the Foreign Office lifts its travel warning and the destination country lets you in, would you be willing to go on holiday in July?
Mm.
And generally, it's a large minority who will.
Yeah.
So typically between 42 and 45% of people. I'm very much among them. Yeah, I'll be at the airport just in front of you with my passport.
I don't think I can be spared. I've got to bring the truth to the people, Simon. I don't think I can leave my post at this stage until things have quietened down a bit.
Yes. So, look, there is going to be a great deal of concern, of worry, of people, particularly if they're in a risk group, thinking, I don't want to go anywhere near an airport or a cruise ship ever again. Thank you very much. And that will transform travel. But I think for those of us who are lucky enough to be in reasonable health, I think there will be a spell in which the travel industry is muted. But then, you know, as soon as you come back with your holiday snaps, I'm going to be looking at those and think, oh, it looks great. Yeah, I wish I was sitting there by a bar. Even though half the tables in the restaurant are empty, I still want to be there more than I want to be in Cleethorpes. Not there's anything wrong with Cleethorpes.
You see, you've got to be so careful nowadays who you slag off. I'm actually vicariously enjoying my old holidays at the moment. You know, I'll put the old I'll put the old slideshow on and looked at my holiday in California, looked at my holiday in Spain, looked at my holiday in Greece. You know, and it actually it gives me a perverse amount of pleasure, I have to say.
Oh, it does. And also, this is a great time to be planning trips and working out exactly. I mean, you there you are. You're looking at your holiday snaps, and that's helping inform. So what did I really enjoy about that? And how does that make me want to plan my next trip? So it's a really good situation to good to be able to plan. Well, can I just say, while you are planning, this is for you and for all your lovely listeners.
Yes.
Please, when you think, oh, great, our holiday in July is going to go ahead or whatever, please go over to the drawer where you keep your passports, have a look at them, particularly those annoying children whose passports seem to run out every 5 minutes.
Yes, I've just had to do one of those,
Yep. Okay, now at the moment, very sadly, the passport office says do not apply for a passport unless it's a really urgent case. Now, the problem is that as soon as lockdown lifts, as soon as everybody's gone to the drawer, looked and said, oh, crikey, that runs out a week on Wednesday, and there's going to be a huge surge of applications. So just be aware of it. So if you've got a trip planned, then make sure that you're ready to head straight to the post office and get the check and send thing done. And if you before you book a trip, make sure you're going to be allowed out of the country because your passport will be valid.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. Very good advice. Simon, thank you very much indeed. Simon Calder, travel editor at The Independent, of course. He's right about that because, of course, there are many countries now who will not let you in as a holidaymaker if your passport only has a certain amount of time left on it. In some cases, I think if it's only got 6 months left on it, they won't let you in. So you have to be very careful about all that. And I know that it seems like a long way away now. Nobody's really planning holidays. But trust me, as Simon says, if they do start suddenly lifting lockdowns and they do start suddenly going, oh, you know, you can now fly to Mallorca, or you can now fly to Rhodes in Greece, or you can now fly to Vienna and stay in a hotel, people will start wanting to do it. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Matthew Lesh, head of research at the Adam Smith Institute. We're going to talk to him about this contact tracing app in the Isle of Wight. The trials began yesterday. A little bit of breaking news for you, though. Rory Stewart apparently has quit the London mayoral race. We were talking about Sadiq Khan only yesterday with Susan Hall, who said that his statement about the fact that he had not been asked to appear before any sort of mayoral question time situation was indeed untrue. I can tell you that she was absolutely right about that, and he was absolutely wrong. But here's what Rory Stewart says. I've decided that I will not be standing again for mayor in the now delayed 2021 election. It has been a great privilege to work with so many amazing people with such passion and vision for London. Thank you very much again from the bottom of my heart. So I wonder where Rory Stewart's going to end up next. That means basically if he turns up outside your door, you're under no obligation to let him come in and spend the night because he's not running for mayor anymore. This is Talk Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Ian Collins coming up at 1 o'clock, of course. Dan Wooden here at 4. He'll take you through the latest government press briefing that happens around about 5 o'clock. Boris Johnson still saying that he's going to set out the details of a plan for the next steps on Sunday of this particular weekend, so we can look forward to that. It certainly seems as though there will be some lightening of the restrictions on lockdown, but it remains to be seen precisely how that is going to happen. It is, of course, though, now just after 12:30, so it is time for our homeschooling section of the show. And so if you haven't done it yet, please do gather your children around the radio or around the DAB or the Alexa or whatever it is you're listening to us on, or even around the TV where you can now watch us live streaming on YouTube, because we're about to speak to Theo Randall, chef at the Intercontinental in Park Lane. Theo, very good afternoon to you.
Very good afternoon to you too.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Now, you're going to do something which even I, as a rather what I would regard as an enthusiastic amateur, have never tried to do, and that is to make pasta from scratch.
Well, it's very easy. I mean, you can make pasta. I mean, basically, it's just using flour, eggs, a little bit of water, and you can make it in a bowl by hand.
Okay.
And then roll it out. All you need is a really decent-sized wooden rolling pin.
Okay. I've got one of those.
Okay, well, so what, I mean, the basic recipe is 200 grams of Tipo 00 flour, which is a particular type of pasta flour.
Okay. Is that easy to find?
It is easy to find. I mean, a lot of supermarkets sell it. It's just called pasta flour.
Okay.
And then you whisk up two whole eggs, two yolks, And then it's a little bit like making cement. You sort of make a hole in the middle of the flour.
Yeah.
You put the beaten eggs in, and then you bring the flour and the edges it together, and then you start mixing it with like a spoon. And you'll end up with this very dense sort of mixture.
Mm.
And if it feels a little bit hard, add like a tablespoon of water. But essentially, you'll end up with this almost like Play-Doh plastic.
Okay.
And then what you want to do is, rather than doing it, roll it all in one go, divide it into four pieces. So it's brilliant for the family. And then put all four pieces onto a work surface, a wooden, chopping board would be an ideal surface. And then using the rolling pin, roll it as thin as you possibly can. And then the trick is to cut it into three, and then roll it over, and then slice it so you've got like little slices of tagliatelle. So
okay.
A little bit of flour in between. Fold it over, and then cut it with a knife, and then dry the pasta. And there's loads and loads of things you can do with it. I mean, one of the most simplest things to do with it is making, obviously, a tomato sauce.
Yeah.
And, if you have a few old tomatoes in the fridge, fry a little bit of garlic in some olive oil, get one of those hand blenders and just blend the tomatoes to a pulp, skins, seeds, everything. And then just add that to the tomato and the garlic, and a little bit of fresh basil if you've got it, and a little bit of olive oil. And then toss that in the cooked pasta. Or one of my favorites at the moment is, obviously, English asparagus is in prime season. Mm. And that's making a little carbonara. So cook the pasta. And while you're cooking the pasta, get an egg yolk. Use a little bit of the pasta water. Whisk up the egg yolk with a bit of the pasta water, a little bit of Parmesan cheese. And then blanch the asparagus, and then mix all items together. You end up with a sort of almost like an asparagus carbonara without the bacon.
Yes.
You have the bacon as well if you want. But
very nice.
It's a great for this time of year. Lovely texture.
Now, when you're cooking the pasta, I presume because it's fresh pasta, it cooks really quickly.
It cooks very, very quickly. Very good point. I mean, if you dry the pasta for like an hour or two, then it'll have more of a bite to it. If you cook it straight away, it literally will cook in 30 seconds.
Wow. So should it, when you've sort of dried it, should you wait for it to feel hard, as it were? Should it be a bit hard?
Yes, I mean, the thing to do is to lay it flat onto like a tray with a little bit of the flour or a bit of greaseproof paper and let it just sit there for 2 hours.
Mm.
And what will happen is the pasta will go quite brittle. And that helps with the bite to the pasta. If you cook it, then you'll end up having that sort of al dente bite.
Yes.
If you cook it straight away, it can be a little bit slimy and not so pleasant.
And does it matter how long it is? I mean, do you prefer it to be long or do you prefer it to be cut short?
I would say about 20 centimetres long is about the perfect length for tagliatelle. I mean, you can do other shapes as well. You can do a tagliarini, but then it's much harder to cut. So tagliatelle is probably the simplest one to do.
Right, OK. And as far as the flouring of it, as you're rolling it out and sort of cutting it up, are you still putting flour on from the pasta flour as well?
Yeah, a little bit of pasta flour will help it, but not too much because you end up, it sort of slips around underneath. So you want a little bit of, they want to be a little bit of purchase on the pasta and the top.
So yes.
The chopping board always helps. But the reason I say wooden rolling pin is because a wooden rolling pin has got more texture, so it holds the pasta together better.
And,
if you've got a pasta machine, even better, but not everyone has one.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I was saying before we had this conversation, I said, I hope Theo's going to be able to tell us how to do it if you haven't got a pasta machine, because that's one of those things that, if you've got all the gear in the kitchen, that's one thing, but a lot of people don't. And this would have been really useful information. I'm not saying it's not now, but when nobody could buy any pasta, it would have been fantastic for people because, there was a point at which every shop I went to around, I guess it must have been around the middle of March or something, you just couldn't find pasta for love nor money.
Well, you've got me on the show too late. I mean,
I blame myself.
It's difficult to get. It was difficult to get flour. That's your excuse.
So yes,
it's been difficult. But it's in Emilia Romagna, in the town of city of Bologna, they will never use a pasta machine. Everything's rolled by hand.
Okay,
they have these amazing shops like delicatessen, and all they sell is fresh pasta.
So wow.
Everyone goes and buys their fresh pasta, takes it home and cooks. Mm. But they will refuse to use a pasta machine. They think by rolling the pasta with a rolling pin, it's the most authentic, and it's the traditional way of doing it. So really, that is the proper way of doing it.
Absolutely. And could you make, if you were to be a bit more ambitious, could you make lasagna sheets the same way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, lasagna sheets are extremely easy to make. I mean, you just roll them out, and then you lay them flat and let them dry slightly, and then just blanch them in water. So, I mean, if you look on my Instagram feed, I did an aubergine lasagna.
Okay.
And it's one of those delicious things to make. Aubergine's almost like meat. And so you blanch the pasta, and then you lay a tomato sauce, aubergine, a bit of tomato sauce, and then some mozzarella. And then just keep layering up with the sheets, and you have a fantastic one. You can always make ravioli as well. Just roll a long sheet, get some spinach and some ricotta, do little blobs of spinach and ricotta, a good inch between, and then fold them over and then just push down. And then use a sharp knife, just cut out. Make sure there's no air in the pasta.
Okay.
But that is quite easy to do.
It sounds like hours of fun if you've got kids as well, because as you say, you can get all sorts of different people working in different parts of the kitchen if you've got room for that.
Absolutely. It's hours of fun, but a little insurance tip when you're making pasta, you've got to have a damp tea towel. So get a tea towel, put it under the tap, give it a really good squeeze. And then when you're sort of in between doing things, like you've rolled out the pasta, you're just about to put the filling on or you're about to cut it. Put the damp tea towel on top of the pasta and that'll keep it from drying up and cracking, because there's nothing worse than having dried pasta.
No, exactly right. And can you, if you're making pasta, is it possible to put it away for another day, or do you need to just make it and cook it that day?
Well, there's lots of things you can do. If you're making a pasta dough and you've got too much, you can put it in one of those little sealed bags, those sort of sandwich bags, and freeze it. As long as you defrost it and let it sort of defrost naturally and not put it in the microwave, it will be absolutely fine. The other thing is, if you make pasta and you just roll it out and you've got maybe too much tagliatelle, keep it in the fridge. It will last for 3 or 4 days.
Okay. Well, that's great advice. And I know that it's not an easy time for you guys at the moment in sort of commercial kitchens and things. How are things? I mean, I don't even know if the Intercontinental's open, is it?
No, the restaurant's not open. Theoretically, the Intercontinental's not open yet, but we're all ready to get back.
What are you hopeful of? Because obviously we're hearing, and I don't want to take you off into a direction you don't want to go, but we're hopeful that there will be some lifting of the restrictions by Boris Johnson on Sunday. But a lot of people I know in the restaurant business are not all that sure they can make enough money if they've got to have so few people actually having dinner.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. I think the thing is, you can't just sort of operate a restaurant at sort of 50% capacity. You need to, because you've got all the staff and everything. So we'll have to wait until things are cleared up a bit. But I mean, once there's the restrictions are lifted a bit, we'll probably start doing some, home deliveries and things like that, and then sort of gradually build it up. But it's going to be tough. I mean, the hospitality industry it's very tough in the hospitality industry, because you can't work from home. That's the point.
No,
it's a tough one. But
and I'm also told, even if you've got a reasonably big room to put the customers in, you've got a pretty small kitchen.
Yeah, you've got a small kitchen, so I think there's going to be restrictions on, you'll have to work out how you can do it, sort of smaller menu, less people working, obviously big distance between tables, and there's going to be, unfortunately, there's going to be gloves and face masks, and that's the new normal, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we've all had to, change the way we do certain things. Theo, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. Great advice on how to make pasta with the kids. All you need is some eggs, some flour, and a rolling pin, it would seem. So get going and see if you can get some of that 00 pasta flour, which some people are saying is quite hard to get. But hey, listen, I managed to find some flour the other week, so I'm sure it's possible to find it somewhere. But it certainly sounds like a good thing to do, just from the point of view of getting your kids interested in cooking. I think it sounds like fun. Because if for some reason it messes up, as I always say, don't worry about it. Just chuck it in the bin, start again. It's flour and eggs. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we've got some calls. We're going to hear from Plank of the Week. And also, of course, it's Archie's birthday.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear baby Archie. Happy birthday to you. Harry, let's keep Archie out of the public spotlight. Let's film a video and put it on Instagram for everybody to see him. I'm reading him a book. It's called Duck Rabbit. What a lovely moment that was from Chateau Marmont. Thank you from Megan and Harry. It is his first birthday, and apparently he's going to have a birthday cake later with no sugar in it. Let's talk to David, who's in the Cotswolds. Hello, David.
Hello, yeah.
Hello.
it may be of interest to you, but some may not. I was a junior house physician covering A&E in James's Valley. In the last flu pandemic.
Oh, really?
Which was the so-called Hong Kong flu, which actually didn't come from Hong Kong. It came from mainland China.
Uh-huh.
There were 80,000 deaths. Those are the government statistics. English deaths.
Yeah. And were you were you at risk at any time when, as a medical practitioner?
Well, completely, yes, because I was young and I needed the money because I was filling in between two jobs.
Right. But what I'm saying is, David, were you then all sort of masked up? Did you have to have all sorts of protective equipment?
No, not at all. We were careful with hygiene, obviously.
Right.
Washing hands and things, but that was about it, really.
Right. And was there any kind of particular problem for doctors and nurses in the front line?
Well, yes. I mean, some of them got the flu. It was the H3N2 virus.
Right.
Which is still rumbling around now.
Okay.
And
presumably it wasn't as deadly as this one, though.
Well, I don't know. 80,000 English deaths were pretty high.
Yeah, but, I mean, we haven't finished with this one yet.
No, we haven't.
We're at sort of 30,000 already, aren't we?
My observation is that this seems to be more rapidly spreading than any other disease I've ever seen.
Yes, I think that's the problem.
I'm 27 now. And it's highly infectious, and that's why these precautions are so good.
No, I get that. Listen, David, your phone line's cracking up a bit, so I'm going to let you go. I'm going to talk to Malcolm in a second. Before we do that, though, I did say earlier we did film Plank of the Week yesterday in the company of Patrick Christie's and Emily Carver, and a lot of you have already seen it and said it's one of the funniest ever. So let's have a listen to what happened when Owen Jones's name came up. I do wonder, Patrick, whether Owen Jones spends his entire life with a microphone, with a magnifying glass, you know, looking at all the people that are on TV with bookcases behind them, looking for anything that he can pick up. And clearly, he made a massive blunder here, didn't he?
Oh, he absolutely did. But I mean, I think it says more about Owen Jones, certainly, than it does about Michael Gove's book collection. You'd be pleased to see, Mike, as well, that I've got no books behind me here. You know that I don't read. So it would just be several copies of Wayne Rooney's autobiography, although I have a rather fruity number about that period that Germany doesn't like to talk about. So we might have done that. But no, look, I think it says more about Owen Jones than anything else, didn't it, really? And of course, you're allowed to read stuff that you disagree with, right? In fact, it helps.
Are you? Oh, I thought that had been outlawed by the left. I thought you weren't allowed to do that anymore.
This is it, isn't it? I mean, does he just want just, you know, the relentless kind of right-wing books that are there? Michael Gove can't deviate whatsoever from what his political ideology is. No, of course, you're allowed to read stuff that you don't agree with. That's the rules.
Go to YouTube and you can watch all that in its glorious Technicolor. You can also listen to it as a podcast now as well, where you can find it on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham's feed, which is on iTunes, it's on Acast, and of course it's on Spotify if you're on that as well. Let's go back to the phones. Malcolm is in Oxford. Hello, Malcolm.
Hello, Mike.
How are you, sir?
Today?
I'm very well indeed. Very well. Slightly disappointed I couldn't get to the end of the Happy Birthday song without bursting out laughing, but there we are.
Well, yeah. Mike, confusion.
Yes.
We have a Labour minister
Shadow.
That acts as a, she's a doctor on the front line.
Oh, yeah.
Risking her life.
So we keep being told,
according to John Ashworth.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the forefront. What I can't understand is, what was she doing in the House of Commons when she should really have been using the technical facilities on video calling rather than being there in person?
Well, it's a very good question. I think I'm right in saying it was her first appearance in that role, and perhaps she felt that she had to make a stand. And I think, you know, I wouldn't give her a hard time necessarily for that. But what I would say is that all this fuss about the tone and people are having to go at Matt Hancock and say he shouldn't be talking to a woman about the tone that she uses. He didn't actually talk about her tone. He said the tone, because I think he's getting increasingly fed up, not surprisingly, with being accused by members of the Labour Party of deliberately causing people's deaths.
Well, the thing is, Mike, the Matt Hancock's and others have been accused of being responsible for the death of thousands of people.
Yeah.
That is an absolute disgrace.
It is. It's a libel, apart from anything else, because to think that any minister of the Crown of this nation would actively, in some way, you know, promote the death of people is quite a disgusting thing to say.
Well, the thing is, under law, if you're responsible for the death of somebody, it's either murder, corporate manslaughter, or manslaughter.
Yeah, exactly, you know, right.
There's no. This government is doing the best that it can with the information they are given by the so-called experts.
Yeah.
The expert that's had an extra whatever...
When they can be bothered to come out from under the duvet.
Well, heaven forbid.
You know.
But the thing is, when these experts tell the government has to listen. If they don't listen, they'll be accused of ignoring the experts. It's a no-win situation.
Well, it is, but also I don't think there's any need for it, you know? Keir Starmer has a reasonable tone about his conversations with Boris Johnson. He can be critical of the government. I don't think he's right to ask the questions that he's asking. I would prefer to hear Keir Starmer asking questions about the financial situation now rather than to continue to bang on and on about the same old stuff, about whether, you know, the mistake was made, that not enough testing was done. And I mean, you know, in some ways, if that's true, then, of course, it should be discussed at some point. But during Prime Minister's questions, I think most people in this country would rather hear the answer to what is happening about the furloughs, what is happening about the banking support, what is happening about the financial state of most people's home economies now, right? Not all this nonsense about why are you, you know, allowing people to die and don't you feel like you should apologise for all of these poor families. And once again, quoting BMA studies... You know, BMA studies are not to be trusted. It's as simple as that.
Well, I don't think Prime Minister Blair was accused or accepted or anything else with the hundreds of thousands of deaths caused by the bombing in an illegal war. So, you know, people have short memories.
Well, they certainly do. Don't forget the Chilcot inquiry, you know.
Absolutely.
Didn't find anything had gone wrong. Amazing.
It's amazing.
It really
anyway,
is.
Anyway, keep well.
Thank you, sir. Malcolm, take care of yourself. Very kind. Great to talk to all the people that we spoke to today. If you do try to get through to us and you aren't successful, please don't give up, because we are very busy at the moment. We've got masses of new listeners, masses of new viewers on YouTube. The numbers are absolutely going through the roof, and I'm very, very grateful to all of you who have found the home of common sense and are continuing to stay with us, because we are, without question, the only place that wants to hear what you have to say and wants to know what questions you would like to ask. Let's talk to Paul in Wolverhampton. Hello, Paul.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, very well, sir. What can I do for you?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. The one is I'm a little sceptical on the data that they're giving out for the death
yes.
toll.
Right.
I mean, the good thing is that we're giving a very, very honest death toll rate.
Right. Nobody else is.
No, like all the different companies, countries and what have you. But the biggest problem is, I think it's to be higher than what it actually is, because I don't know whether you know the protocol.
Mm.
My wife is a funeral director.
Okay.
And what it is at the moment, that all the registering deaths, that there used to be a part one and a part two.
Right.
And that came through when, you know, the Harold Shipman.
Oh, yes.
Basically, so the first part is the only part that they need now. Now, on that, they're giving the medical history of if they've got any underlying. But if they've been in, like, if they're in a care home or something like that, or they've been at home where somebody's had COVID, it will go on the list.
Yeah.
But it could be down at number 10, but because they're not being tested, the the Office of National Statistics are taking everything on a death certificate that he's got COVID. So they may have only, obviously, this is where it comes, died of or died with.
Yes.
But they haven't been tested to confirm that they had got corona. So I think these figures that we're getting, I mean, everyone is a sad one, obviously.
Right.
But everyone that we're getting at the moment, I think it's a lot higher than what it actually is.
So are you saying that there should be more, the death figure should be higher, or it actually should be lower?
I think if they were able to test everybody that has passed in the last couple of, which they're not going to be able to, because the biggest problem we've got is the coroners are so overrun
yes.
that they're passing them back to the doctors and saying, no, well, basically, you can confirm that they have passed away, but they're looking at their medical history.
Mm.
But if there's been any signs of COVID within either the care home or at home or people that look after them or whatever, that it's going on the list.
Yes. No, I think you're absolutely right, Paul. Listen, thanks very much indeed. We've got to run because we're right near the end of the show and Ian Collins is coming up next after 1 o'clock.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 till 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.